Hey, you know what I didn't see at all this year, though? I didn't see some stupid number one prospect ice time counter bullshit. So I can appreciate that ESPN has moved in a positive direction
Yeah, we
compared
didn't
to the
have
last
that
few years.
for Celebrini or any of that all
Yeah,
weekend.
right? It wasn't how old is he now, ticking up from 17 something or ever. You know, that would have been perfect.
Tech Hockey Guide presents the Chasing McNaughton Podcast, covering the Michigan Tech Huskies and the CCHA with your host, Tim Brown, Rob Gilreath, Dustin Lindstrom, and Matt Cavender.
Welcome to episode 52 of season 5 of the Chasing McNaughton Podcast, presented by Tech Hockey Guide and recorded from the state of hockey. I'm Tim Brown, your host, and I'm joined this week by Rob Gilreath.
Hey guys.
And Matt Cavender.
You already know who it is.
I might as well do this right on the podcast. We're throwing Dustin under the bus because we're switching from Slack to Discord and he refuses to join us. So he was not aware that we are recording tonight. So that's where he is. I don't even know if he listens to this, so he might never hear this. So with Michigan Tech season over now and the Providence Regional behind us, we reached out to Mike McMahon, who covered the regional for College Hockey News and runs a Substack called College Hockey Insider. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Yeah. This week we'll talk about Michigan Tech, BC, the Providence Regional, the NCAA tournament. I'm sure we'll talk about the Misfits fundraiser and their lovely trek to Providence and back. And then we'll talk about the transfer portal. And I guess maybe we should have that Stonehill conversation on the podcast since Matt's so enamored with Stonehill. So
fascinated by them.
Anything else you guys want to talk about?
Nope. That sounds
nope.
good.
Now let's put a bow on the season.
All right. We'll be right back with Mike McMahon after a little thank you notes and a brief note from our sponsor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We fund everything at Tech Hockey Guide from listeners like you. You can show your support by becoming a patron at patreon.com/techhockeyguide. Whether you're interested in question priority, access to patron-only Zoom chats with coaches and players, in-stat deep dives, extended versions of the podcast, unedited video or audio, early access, or commercial-free listening, there's a level for you. We also now have 15% discounts off annual memberships with tiers ranging from $2 to $50 per month. Again, sign up at patreon.com/techhockeyguide.
Fibke Dental is a general dentistry practice located in downtown Rhinelander, Wisconsin, home of the Hodag. Look online at fibkedental.com or find them on Facebook. They do pain-free dentistry for kids, adults, people that went to great schools, and people that ended up at Northern Michigan. Stop in and say hi between 8 and 5 and tell them THG sent you. That is Fibke Dental.com.
All right. Welcome back, Mike. So you got to cover the Providence Regional. What were your impressions of Michigan Tech, the team, and Michigan Tech, the fans in Providence?
Well, I'll start with the fans because I thought that was one of the coolest parts of the whole weekend, to be honest with you. Like we were in the building pretty early and for a 2 o'clock start, I think I was in there by like 11:30 and they were already in there, which was like the doors aren't even open yet. And the band was in there. In fact, we were joking around. I was joking around with somebody else. I said, hey, BC's band is, you know, an hour away. And they ended up getting there. But at the time I was like, are they not coming? Cause like Beck's band's here. so it was, That was cool because you don't see that a lot. I don't
well,
think.
I think it's because the hotel check in isn't until after the game and the bus got there at 11:05. So,
<All right. laughs> but it was cool just in terms, just in general. I mean, like people traveling that far to, it is a big game. It's the regionals, but like you don't see that all the time. It's a couple hour bus ride, maybe 20 plus hour bus ride. You know, not so much.
Yeah, I think.
But
it took
so that was cool.
20 hours and 5 minutes from departure to arrival.
Oof. Kind of more than one driver.
That includes like every 4 hours they had to stop for like a half hour for the bus drivers to switch and get a break and let everybody use like get some snacks and stuff. So, and then they had like a longer break, I think around dinner time on departure day. So yeah, it was a long trek. I kept track of it and had some fun on social media talking about waving to Marv when they drove past Ann Arbor and fake did the OHIO chant as they drove through Ohio and then said, just kidding, nobody likes Ohio. So I had some fun on social media following them along. So it was fun. Then we had a few issues with the numbers of students that committed to go versus how many seats were on the bus. So 5 kids ended up driving their own car.
Whoa.
And just followed the bus. Yeah.
And just followed the bus. And then apparently they had a tire issue on the way back. So they were like 2 hours behind the bus on the way. Like it took them 26 hours to get home. So.
Well, that's why I wish I knew that. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Kellen said, he said that the 5 of them had asked to take their own car before the bus, before the bus was all figured out. So like it wasn't a huge deal for them to pivot because they already wanted to do their own road trip. That was kind of crazy.
Yeah. You don't see that. I mean, you used to see it all the time. There's not a lot of programs, I think, left that have fans that'll do that. Like they because you know what part of it is it's so easy to watch these games without having to take a 20-hour bus ride to get there. You know what I mean?
That's, so that's cool. That's the big thing with Tech fans. That's our big gripe with Michigan at this point is like, you can sit up in your big ivory tower and be better than us. We don't care at this point, but go to the game. We are so sick of seeing like the children of Yost. Like they're talking about how great they do in their regional and they're taking a picture of their television. Like it was a 6-hour drive for you guys. It's not that bad. Just go. If you're the best fans in college hockey, go to the game. It's not tough. It just ends up looking like Stoop Kid from Hey Arnold, where you're too afraid to leave, you know, your home and do anything fun. It's I don't know. That's probably just my perspective as a Tech fan where we'll do stuff like this at the drop of a hat. We're used to fundraising and sending kids on 20-hour bus rides, but it's frustrating when they're just like, when they claim to be the best fans in college hockey, but they won't get on a bus for 6 hours.
It's fun to see. And it's good to see that the supporter culture that has kind of grown up over the last, like, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so with the Misfits. Not that they weren't there when early days, but it was a much smaller group. It didn't have the as heavy of the organized travel, right? Now there's enough Misfits alumni that did the small travel, right? That we're just happy to send a shitload of them along, right? Yep. So the alumni base isn't just Tech hockey fan alumni. It's actual Misfits alumni. They're like, just go. We'll send you. Don't worry about it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I had the co-founder with me gave us like over $2,000 last year for to go to Allentown for the Misfits. And this year we had about a dozen donations that were enough to cover 2 Misfits or more. And we had between us and what the school got, there was over 200 donations made between the 2 pledge drives. That I'm aware of. So it was pretty crazy. And you know, we have some extra money from this year. And I talked to the bigger donors to figure out what we're going to do with that. And it's basically, we're just going to start a playoff travel endowment for the Misfits and and keep it growing and try and give them some support when they need it, whether it's to go to Bemidji for a conference championship game or Mankato for a semifinal or Northern for a quarterfinal round. We don't really care. We'll try and support them and make it as cheap as we can for them to go. I mean, the Misfits paid nothing to go to.
Well, I mean, they paid with real sore asses. Probably.
No, they
that's
paid
a lot of bus time.
they paid no cash other than their food. Cause Todd Van Cleek, who deserves a giant shout out, bought all the tickets for the Misfits, which was almost $2,000 on his own, and agreed to buy $2,000 more worth of tickets if they had somehow upset BC, and then bugged me multiple times asking what happens if they win with the rest of the extra costs. And I'm like, oh, we have that covered, Todd. It's okay. Like the extra costs if we had won were only a couple $1,000s, so that would have been easy because it's just more lodging and a little bit more per diem for the bus drivers, and that was it. All the other costs were fixed. So, and he was gonna plop down another $1,800 for more tickets. So, yeah, and the other thing that we've done a good job of is finagling with the arenas to get like student pricing. Last year we got the students like $26 tickets for all sessions to be up by the band so that they could have their flags and signs and everything and not bother anybody and stand. This year we didn't do that. They went through the tech allotment, but they still managed to get like a student price, which was good and helps. But last year they didn't have to pay anything for the tickets because I ended up selling the championship game tickets for more than we paid for our all session passes. So
yeah, just before we leave it too far in the dust, I do want to give a big shout out to the staff and the management at the Lehigh Valley facility, because they did allow the kids to have flags and stuff when they heard, when they heard and understand what was going on, which is,
I love
cool
an arena.
They wanted to be part of that atmosphere. Yeah.
An arena that wants to bring that tradition and that atmosphere. Cause in the McGinnis, they're all standing and they're all waving flags constantly. Right. There's a lot more of that goes on. They went in church mode, as they call it, this weekend, which is what they have to do at Northern, because Northern won't let you stand either. So that's why they were sitting down and standing up the entire game, right? They sit down during play because that's what's required. But as soon as the whistle goes, they're popping up, and the just like the band has to wait for it, they're gonna wait and jump up. Allentown was awesome. They're like, "What do you guys normally do? Come here, do it here, right? Yep. Have a good time here." Bring your flags, it's great when the arena works with it. We always hear complaints about regional sucking. Well, there's a pretty simple answer to it. Fundraise a couple of buses of kids to make it loud. And if each school can do that, we're one of the farthest drives that's going to happen, with the exception of, Denver and CC and those guys all the way out west. Why can't some of these Eastern schools that literally have to just walk to the arena that they're at compared to us bring at least one bus of fans to have a good time? I don't get it. It bugs me.
Yeah, I don't really understand it either. Is it a thing? It's a thing that's out here, I think, in some part. I mean, the interesting thing with BC is they had not been there for a couple of years, which was
right.
Surprised me. Like, it's one thing. It's become difficult, I think, with some of these fans that the fan bases out east that have been there all the time, because it's been a lot of repeat stuff where they tend to get not bored with it, but you get a little jaded.
We've lost 3 years in a row by getting slaughtered, yet the kids are still going.
Well, but I think some of it is, like he's saying, though, it's like,
yeah,
do we really want to go to Providence again? We went there 5 years ago or whatever. Like sure. We haven't gone to the same place yet, have we?
I think the answer to this is twofold. The first is that, for the students have created such an experience around going to a Michigan Tech hockey game that is so not dependent on the result of the game at all. They like to go there and have fun and cause havoc. They could be losing 7-1 and it's still going to be a blast for those kids. So there's that. And there's also, you have to remember, on the East Coast, there's this thing called civilization and things to do, where where us at Michigan Tech, we've rallied around that's our big community event and thing to do on Friday and Saturday. Whereas in the East Coast, you could have Uncle Cracker in town or whatever, and you might miss the hockey game for that,
Yeah. Well, and I get it too, because they're not cheap. And if you didn't do the legwork of pressing the arena, you were paying $50 to go on Friday and another, or $40 to go on Friday and another $40 to go on Sunday. Whereas we paid, I think, $25 a person, because we pushed for a student rate. And Allentown, we didn't have to push as hard because they already all we did was ask for the same deal that Penn State students got. They were getting $26 for all session, both, both the semifinal and final day. And they were getting provided, I think, a bus from Happy Valley or whatever. So we already had, I was like, "Hey, our bus ride's longer. Can we get the same price?" And he was like, "Sure." So it made it easy there, and it was a little more work to get that figured out this time. And a lot of shout out goes to Samantha and Joel for all their work in taking care of getting the quotes for the bus ahead of time. Like when I was talking to Suzanne after the Bemidji State or the win for in Bemidji State at Bemidji State, she said they had planned ahead and gotten quotes to all four regionals last week or the week before, so they knew how much it was going to cost no matter where. And Joel texted me later on Friday night so I could start, trying to get money raised, because we knew we were going somewhere and we didn't know where. And of course it was the most expensive one. But yeah, and then Samantha worked out the hotels and got us a pretty good deal. I have no idea where they stayed. All I saw was, I think
they
were closed.
They were at, I think, a courtyard, but not the one downtown you could walk to, because Kellen said, we're at the courtyard. I'm like, oh, I am too. He goes, not that one.
That's not surprising.
They were curious whether or not they'd be able to stay for the second game. But because all the bus drivers had to go back and get rest time in, they left or didn't stay for the second game. That's why most of them weren't there. They had no way to get back out to the other place they were staying without going with the bus drivers. Otherwise, I guarantee you a bunch of them would have been there just doing stupid stuff at the second game for no reason, right?
Yeah.
But they were kind of their hand was played a little bit by where they were ended up staying.
Do you work in manufacturing, product design, or product development? Is your business trying to improve efficiency while also producing at scale? Livonia Technical Services can help. They provide world-class quality improvement training and consulting for failure modes and effect analysis, product development, and cost reduction. All things that could help Northern Michigan assemble a competent defense. If you think your business could use a prevention mindset and reduce manufacturing costs, a partnership with Livonia Technical Services might be right for you. Check them out at livoniatech.net. That's LIVONIATech.net.
Are you in the market for insurance? Have your rates for home, auto, boat, or more been increasing way beyond inflation? If so, maybe it's time you spoke with Aaron Pietola and the team at Arcadia Insurance Group, serving Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and more. Who better to serve you than a former Michigan Tech player? For more information, call 866-511-1069 or go to arcadiaagency.com. So both of you that were there, Rob and Mike, one of the things that I think TV did a horrible job of showing was how did the fight, fracas, whatever you want to call it, start?
I am not sure. I saw a really high speed contact between Mosley and somebody in the middle of the ice, and then the shit hit the fan.
I think it was Leonard.
Leonard was on the ground with Chase. He was the one tussling with Chase. Yeah, but I don't know what actually kicked them off
to do more than just the Mosley hit. Like,
I mean, Chase is always going to be sniffing around any scrum and joining. Yeah. We all know that, right? That's definitely a part of his game. Yeah. But I didn't see what actually got them on the ground. Was Chase's helmet? Chase's helmet was off first, I think, or Leonard's helmet was off. Helmet was already off. Like somebody knocked the other guy's helmet off.
I think it was when they were kind of wrestling around.
Yeah, and then the other one got knocked off too. They both ended up without him on the ground on the ice. But yeah, it was an interesting little bit there, and it was unfortunate, I think, to see that kind of stuff happen and spiral out of control a little bit, because it felt like to me like that happened after we'd already started to be clearly outplayed and the game was over. I'd rather go out a little bit better than that, but I don't think Mosley's hit was, you know, egregious headhunting style like the other five was. The other five was clearly elbow, face, boards. Like,
and yet Colby on the broadcast had it completely reversed and said he didn't think that the BC guy should be ejected, and then was all over Mosley. And I'm like, it doesn't even look like Mosley hit his head. It looks like the guy got hit in the chest and flung his head back.
Yeah, the first five was straight elbow to the face. I mean, that one was not pretty.
Yeah, the Perot one was pretty cut and dry, I thought.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of him this year. That's not his game. So I don't think he went out there headhunting the kid either.
But whoever got hit was down low too. Like they were down low on the boards.
Yeah. It's a textbook 5 minutes in a game. I mean, there was no question about that, whether it was intentional or not. He clearly main point of contact was the head. And then that second one, I mean, I looked like it was more of a, it was a hit. I didn't think that was anything egregious.
It looked like it's just a high speed collision at center ice.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like,
but I think there was an overreaction to it because of the fact that it was such a big collision. You know,
it was fast. I mean, it was bang bang behind the play, like, or quick and like, whoa, what was that?
Yeah, and I know that, you know, this is obviously my tech color glasses coming out, but I know a lot of people felt like this, where the ESPN crew was kind of talking like Mosley had just shot this guy. And I was like, it was a loud contact. I feel like it was incidental. I'll buy it was a bad hit. I'll even take five, but he didn't. It's not like he shot this guy. Like, they keep making it out on the broadcast. I just didn't understand what that was all about. Like, they were just making him a villain for like a freak play that it could happen to anybody.
Well, did you watch the regional final in Providence on TV?
No, Abby? As soon as Tech was done, I am Oh shoot, I gotta switch my name to Turd Ferguson or something again. But
No, you were done after they lost.
no, I'm mentally tapped out. I've you know with how much we've done this year.
Well, if you'd have watched the regional final, you'd have seen that it was pretty obvious that Colby Cohen had some maroon and gold glasses on the entire weekend because he was very slanted
Well, I mean, that's
coverage.
kind of always how it goes when you've got a team that's number one in the nation and they're that good. They got all the draft picks. They're always going to kind of like tilt it that way. And I've kind of accepted that. And it's not.
Hey, you know what I didn't see at all this year, though? I didn't see some stupid number one prospect ice time counter bullshit. So I can appreciate that ESPN has moved in a positive direction
Yeah, we
over
didn't
the
have
last
that
few years.
for Celebrini or any of that all
Yeah,
weekend.
right? It
Yeah,
wasn't how old is he now, ticking up from 17 something or ever. You know,
yeah.
that would have been perfect with him.
Yeah.
The fact that there's a 17-year-old kid out there playing D1 hockey is unbelievable to start with. The fact that he's as ridiculously good as he is as well is terrifying. You know, that's a big get for college hockey to have a kid that young go that direction instead of go the other way, right? So, you know, that's fantastic to see. But yeah, to have ESPN not have how old is Celebrini up in the corner is
Yeah.
honestly surprising that they don't have that gimmick there with, like, what was it? Makar ice time that they were literally counting how
That
long he's
was
been on the ice a few years ago.
Cole Caulfield against Bemidji, which was funny because Bemidji just bullied Wisconsin that game and they were just like grasping at straws to talk about Caulfield. But to turn the attention back to the team for a second, Mike, because while you were there, my impression of the game is that, you know, obviously in the third, BC's like higher skill ceiling took over. But I thought for the first two, I think that Tech proved that this BC team, I frankly think they look beatable. If you can bottle them up, if you can like make them play a defensive style, they like to just hand you the puck. They
Oh,
seem to do it. They have a lot of turnovers there, and I feel like if you can play like in any sort of defensive posture at all, and you can kind of run with their big dogs, I think that they seem like they really exposed some holes in that game. I think that was really my big takeaway because even though, you know, they from what I saw, their talent is all that in a bag of chips, but their immaturity can really be a factor. So I was
yeah.
wondering what your impression was of the game.
I think that's pretty well put. I've seen them play a lot this year, and it was kind of a similar story. They looked like that way when they played Merrimack too. Again, a team that wanted to slow them down. I was joking about it with Mark Diver, who was next to me in the press box in Providence on Friday. I said, you know, BC looks like the strategy here is we're just going to try to skate through them, like not through the defense, literally through their bodies because they were just skating right into guys. And they were doing that yesterday too. For a long stretch against Quinnipiac. So I don't think that there wasn't a lot of adjustment there. And the thing is you've got a lot of really high-end skill guys at the top of the lineup. Like their bottom six is a little different, obviously, than their top six. But those freshmen and sophomore and Carter Gauthier, like those guys, I think that's what they've been able to do probably for all of their lives is just go through people because they've been better than everybody else. Now it's because the interesting part moving forward is which of these teams that's in the Frozen Four is going to be able to play as hard against them defensively as Michigan Tech or Quinnipiac. I'm not sure that exists because,
It's not Michigan, that's for
yeah,
sure.
it's not Michigan. I don't think it's Denver or BU either.
Yeah,
Although
and I think
Denver.
that's part of the reason they get away with it all years because the style that Tech and Quinnipiac play is not what you see in most of Hockey East, right? Like that's
No, with the
not it.
exception of Lowell and Merrimack probably being the two exceptions of play, try to play a little heavier and a little more defensive. So yeah, I with the teams that are left, I don't know that there's going to be a lot of teams that can throw them off that game. It's going to be a lot of like them in Michigan is just going to be we're just going to try to outskill each other, and the team with more skill is going to win. And then you might get the same thing. You're going to get the same thing with BU. I think you might get the same thing with Denver, although Denver did adapt a little bit over the weekend, I thought, against UMass, and especially against Cornell, because Cornell kind of makes you play that way. But yeah, everybody else that was in the tournament that played a way that I think could frustrate BC is no longer in the tournament. So that's where next week gets a little interesting.
Yeah, I personally think the only team left that could, I feel like could adjust to play that kind of a style or like try to slow the game down. I feel like I personally feel like Denver's the only one that's really got a chance because we saw in the Hockey East Finals that BU's not that team at all.
No.
We all like we are out west, we see Michigan all the time. We know that their model now is essentially trying to go towards being like college hockey's version of a CHL team. So they don't really care all that much about defense either. So I don't expect them making that adjustment. But if I'm watching the film, I'm watching the first two periods of that Tech game and I'm trying to do play pretty similarly to that. I think
Other
that
than
was
poorly pinch on the first shift of the game.
well, yeah, you can't do that,
That
but there that
was
like
so tough to
ESPN crew
watch,
did a
man.
great job of like breaking it down of like, Tech played a 1-3-1 and they just got frustrated and gave the puck straight away. It really just seems not too tough to like obviously their top skill guys are able to just do what you said, Mike, and just like skate straight through you. But if you can bottle them up to like any degree, it seems pretty easy to frustrate them if you've got some like comparable speed, you know?
There was a some Boston College fan like off to the right of us that at some point in the second period went, "We don't fucking chip and chase." And
Really don't.
he
Yeah,
was just
no.
pissed that that's how they were playing. I'm like, well, sorry.
When there's four of you across the blue line, there's not much else you can do,
Yeah,
right?
like, your
and
zone
that's the thing,
entries
you
are
got
a
to
little
adapt.
different.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, you
that's
got to
the
adapt. And that's where, I mean, that's where Tech really played well in the first two. And especially bouncing back after giving up a goal 36 seconds in the game. Because again, I've seen BC a lot. I've seen BC scoring bunches this year, like 4 goals in 2.5 minutes types of bunches. So when they get that first early one, it's like, oh boy, this could get ugly quick
That's
because
what
they're
my
like a pack
reaction
of
was.
wolves.
Yeah.
They are like a pack of wolves, man. Like when they start going, watch out. So the fact that they were able to dial it back in pretty quickly also speaks, I think, to their experience too, and the fact that you had a lot of seniors and a lot of grad students on that team who can snap out of that pretty quickly because that's what it looked like. I mean, it was 36 seconds into the game, and they go, well, dude, 59 minutes left. We're still fine. It's still a hockey game.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you would have told me we'd be going 1-1 because we scored a shorty against the number one like
Yeah,
power play in the country,
that to me is
that's
the
only
highlight
what I would have
of the
shorty
season.
before that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was their second one of the year, as far as I know, right? So
Yeah.
that's insane to have that be the one goal we do manage to score is a shorty is just what a weird game.
Let it be known that nobody shuts out Michigan Tech 3 years in a row in the national tournament.
Well, and I think the other funny thing is all the people like talking about how, bad the final score was. I'm like, it fits right in with BC with what BC did at the Hockey East tournament. Like,
Right.
we almost had a better showing than BU did against them,
We
and
just
we
had to
had a
score
better
one more
showing than
goal. Yeah.
UMass did. So it's like, and we're like definitely on the road there. We're not like at a like it's neutral, but it's obviously not as neutral as like the Hockey East tournament can be because it's everybody's not that far. And it, yeah, like when you look at the scoring of how bad Michigan Tech's last three tournaments are, like we know things about last year that we can kind of just throw out the 8-0 loss and we just chalk that up, right? But the 3-0 loss to UMD was not a 3-0 game. That was just one of those days. I mean, there's a freaking rule change because of that game.
Brian Hallinan deserved better, but anyway,
Yeah.
moving on.
And then this year it's 2-1 going into the third period and it just the wheels fall off. And I wish they could have found a way to keep it closer just for the sake of on paper in 15 years when people look back, they'll see that we kept it 3-1 against BC or something like that. But because nobody's gonna look back at the box score and be like, wow, it was 2-1 after two. Like that's the part that stinks. And there's been a lot of CCHA other teams fans like ragging on us for nothing to show for our six tournaments in 10 years. And that's kind of true. But there's a lot of context that's missing from that
Hey,
with.
I just want to point out we are on total goals in Providence, Rhode Island versus Boston College are still up. So
Woo!
screw you, BC.
Oh, overall in
Yeah,
history?
overall, we got more goals than they do.
Well,
So.
speaking of that, it was also really funny to see the number of BC fans that were like, Michigan Tech's a real school. And I was like, yeah, we beat you in 1965, right?
Right.
Like,
Yeah.
and he's like, really, you're going back that far? Have some pride. And I'm like, know your history. Like,
How many titles do you count? You stop somewhere in the middle of your history? I don't
yeah.
think you do.
It's not like
No,
any
you.
of our titles are like those ones like football in like the early 1900s where it was just like Like we just recognize this as our national championship, even though nobody did, you know?
Yeah, and it's like Michigan football that went out there and said they won their like 1,000th game, and they're still counting like games from way back in their history that were like against Ann Arbor High School. So I mean, they didn't stop caring there. So why should we, you know?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, for the vast part, sitting around the crowd, I stayed for the second game and watch it. I didn't stay for the final because, you know, I had to do a whole bunch of work, which is why I was really late getting here today. But just sitting around, that's my favorite part of regionals. Just going and BSing with fans from other schools that are there and care, right? Like the BC fans that I was sitting next to watching the Quinnipiac game for the first two periods were just awesome to BS about hockey with. You know, there was a lot of good feeling in, hey, sorry we kicked you guys' ass that bad in the third period, but holy crap, you made us nervous for two, was the general feeling I got around the rink. And everybody was super impressed, you know, just with the fans in general, with the band in general, and just how we do well. And that's really all that we can ask for where we're coming from. You know, we're not coming from a huge budget program. We're not a Big Ten school. You know, we're not a Catholic Church funded university in Boston that's got plenty of money to throw around,
Hey,
right?
Jesuit, make sure you get it right or they'll piss their
Sorry.
pants, okay?
Little
Make
sections
sure.
of it, right? But yeah, it's a different place we're coming from. And the fact that we've been in the tournament for 3 years in a row is something that for me growing up, watching some of the worst hockey that's come through Michigan Tech, if you'd have told me we'd be in the tournament six, seven times or six times now, right? In the last 10 years, I'd have told you were crazy 10 years ago. But here we are, and we'll win eventually. I don't care. I'll still go, even if we are losing.
It's your
Just being
fault
there
we
is awesome.
lost, Rob.
Yeah, it's true. I wasn't supposed to be able to make it.
We figured we'd finally win because he couldn't make it for the first time in the six times.
You see, my figuring was that this was probably the time in Michigan Tech's history that they deserved to make the field the least. So that meant that they were going to win at least one because that's usually how sports work, but wasn't to be.
Well, yeah, and then a lot of times it's like the team after the team that was supposed to do something too, right? Like last year's team was, well, I guess last year's team wasn't expected to do anything. So maybe next year they'll do it, right? Because that's how it goes sometimes, is the team after the team that was supposed to do it is the one that figures out how. Because expectations get lowered when a bunch of the upperclassmen graduate, and then suddenly the guys who got that experience can actually follow through and do something with
I
it.
don't know. I still think after watching BC do what they did to us in the third period, that there doesn't need to be a team after that team. That team's
Oh
winning. That team's winning two more games and
no, they
lifting a
can.
trophy up in
I
Minneapolis.
think I do think. Well, Quinnipiac put up a tough battle too, but like I do think the game to get BC is the first one in many respects, because it like if we had been the ones to score 30 seconds in or something and then play that defense like and punch them in the face like I've said all week, like that would have gotten. I mean, they were off their game, and if you somehow would have finished your chances and gotten a lead at some point,
Although
we could have frustrated them to death to finish the game.
to have a 5 minute major and to play as well as we did on the 5 minute major and not get any goals out of that is when I knew we were not going to win the game.
Well, and to be fair to BC, ultimately, like the score won't show it, but ultimately that game was decided by their goalie doing what he did the first 40.
Yeah,
Because if it's like a if it's
he's
a
a decent
3-1 game
goalie.
the other way, like Tech can be Bemidji State them to death for 20 minutes and find a way to win, right?
Yeah, and I think Fowler, I wrote it the other day. I thought this before that game. I think he's the best goalie in college hockey from what I've seen this year. Like he's just lights out. When the spotlight's the brightest too, like that's when he seems to be playing his biggest games. And that's even going back to when he was in the USHL. He did that. And the fact that he's only a freshman, you know,
Right?
and an 18-year-old freshman. And I said this to somebody last week. I said, I understand that they've got a lot of younger guys and they were relying on a lot of 18-year-old true freshmen. There was more pressure on him than any of them. And the reason for that is their backup goaltender, also a freshman. So, like, if Will Smith came in and struggled, okay, well, you still have Cutter Gauthier. You still have, you know, Perreault and Leonard aren't both going to struggle too. You know, they had some guys that could pick up the slack. Nobody was picking up the slack for Jacob Fowler. If Jacob, they put all their eggs in the Jacob Fowler basket, and that was pretty clear from the start of the season because their backup was fresh. There was nobody in there with any experience. So I think he was the one that kind of came in with the most pressure on him too, and it's been lights out all year.
Yeah, he was impressive. there was I mean,
kept him in the game.
We also have a history of shooting directly into the middle of the goalie's chest. That is a problem with Tech hockey the last couple of years. We do make goalies, I feel like, look better. But even on quick movement on the power play, his positioning was so good that that's why it's hitting him in the chest. He's getting across the crease so fast that he's right exactly where he needs to be, making the players that are shooting on him look bad.
Yeah, and he's pretty athletic for like a bigger guy. He is pretty athletic, and that's from what I've seen of him this year. That's when you know he's playing well. So when the puck's hitting him in the chest, he's not giving up rebounds. There's no second chances. But again, like I thought, he kept them in that game early because after they scored 36 seconds in, Tech pretty much controlled the next roughly 39 and a half minutes, if not more. And that's where I think, you know, to your point earlier on too, if you get another one there and it's a 2-1 game where BC's behind and can't generate things and has to chip pucks in deep instead of being able to just kind of free flow it through the neutral zone, that's where frustration really starts to kick in. And that's what it felt like. If you're able to get that one more, that's when I think you could have really gotten that BC team off their game, because they got frustrated quickly. And I think that's why they were coughing up pucks, even on the shorthanded goal. It was just the guy just gave a puck away. I mean, it wasn't like it was a bad turnover. Like, a guy just gave the puck away. The D trying to make the outlet pass up the wall. So when they're frustrated, they don't handle it well, always.
And that's hard to do when you're 17, 18 years old, and it's kind of just worked for you your entire life, right? I mean, Joe did point out how much experience those young kids have from playing in World Juniors and all that other stuff, and that's true. But I do think Jay-Z, our columnist and preview guy, had a good point about, and it kind of showed up a little bit too, in that it does seem like, I think BC gets some lucky goals, but at the same time, I think it's because of their level of skill that they can finish on those crazy plays. And it just seems like they're able to pull off, like, you know, when you see like a weird rebound in front of the goalie, they're the ones that are able to get their stick on it and get it back in the net. Whereas a lot of times you see a Michigan Tech player just miss that chance. And that's where they're getting their luck. But it really is ultimately skill of being able to finish in those situations. And then, but the luck was being in the right place, basically.
Yep. Got to be good to be lucky.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that fifth goal, I keep seeing it replayed, and every replay is slowing it down. Play that fifth goal at actual speed. Holy shit. The speed at which he brings that puck from his rear skate up and releases. Like, he's shooting while the puck is coming up from his skate. Like, he's already in the process of shooting while the puck is coming up. The speed that happened, it was like, that's absurd. And it was right in front of the Misfits, which meant it was right down below me. I was all the way above the Misfits, kind of the side of the band, and had a fantastic view of it. That's one of the best goals, skill-wise, I think I've ever seen scored. Like, of an individual player, just the speed of it was ridiculously awesome.
Yeah.
And every replay slows it down. I'm like, no, play it at full speed so you can actually appreciate what happened here. Because the pass looked like shit. It was behind him. He reaches back with his skate, just flicks it up and shoots it at the same time. Like, the amount of skate play that's kind of in hockey in the last like five so years feels like it's a lot more than it ever used to be. I don't know. Maybe that's just my perception of it, but you know, it seems like players have finally realized, hey, we've got two other places we can catch the puck with instead of just our stick if we can't get it there. You know, and it seems to be a lot more than what it used to be. But that goal was fantastic, with the exception of the assist in the Michigan game yesterday. That's my favorite goal I've seen so far of the tournament. Nazer's assist between his own legs threading the needle between the two Michigan State defenders was ridiculous. Yeah. And that wasn't even the goal. I don't even know how the guy scored it, but the assist was insane.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I know it's kind of centralized on a couple of teams, but it is fun the last couple of years watching the number of skill guys that have come through college hockey and didn't go other routes, whether it's McCarr, Fantilli, Cooley, the BC guys this year, Celebrini, all the Michigan guys. You know, the skill level, I think, at the very top. But again, like, it can be frustrating because it is all kind of centralized on a handful of programs. But the number of those types of guys that are coming through now, is at an all-time high. And I think, look, I think that's why the Frozen Four had the numbers on ESPN that it had last year, too, is you had Fantilli, you had Cooley, you had some storylines where it was, these are top-level NHL picks. You're probably going to get that again. I wouldn't be surprised if again, you're talking about record numbers on ESPN for this Frozen Four because of the fact that you've got all the BC freshmen, you've got the number one pick of the draft playing on BU, you still got all those first-round picks at Michigan. ESPN's going to hammer that home. But that's something they can sell, and that's especially now, you know, we can debate their coverage of the NHL, but now that the fact that they have the NHL, it seems like they care a little bit more, too, about pumping some of those guys, like, hey, this is the future, which helps. At the end of the day, I think that will help everybody eventually, but it is the frustrating part of that, like I said, is it's really those players have become, you know, kind of in a little tiny box here where they go to like one of six schools. You'd like to see that spread out a little bit more, but you know, it's kind of the way college sports in general is going, not just hockey.
Yeah. It's frustrating to watch that and, you know, circle back around to the transfer portal, right? You know, you see,
oh yeah,
you see people bouncing around a lot faster now. And I don't know what the right answer is, but I think, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit, is the pendulum has swung too far now to no loyalty toward program basically, and all rights of the player, right? There needs to be some middle ground somehow found for it.
Well, I think we've talked about it before, Rob, where I think ultimately it has to come down to, like, we need to turn this into contracts where these guys are committing to up to 4 years. And if they want to break that contract, there's like compensation for Michigan Tech for developing the player, right? Like, or yeah, they get released.
More of a European style, right? Release.
Like, you have to do something so that, like, because then at least the coaches can be planning on, like, okay, this guy's committed for a year, so mm-hmm. I have to at least be thinking about what am I going to do if he leaves. But I know these seven guys are committed for 2 years, so I don't have to worry about them yet. Like, at least creating some level of certainty, because, and I appreciate the players having the ability to move, like the movement ability, but it's also crazy to make it to the level it is now, especially with the NIL that isn't controlled by the schools, of trying to navigate how to, like, you're basically recruiting your team constantly, including the guys already there. And it's like, I can't imagine wanting to, like, I was shocked when didn't the guy that became the Bowling Green coach come from pro hockey?
Major Junior was in the WHL.
Major Junior.
Yeah.
So it's just like, like, it seems odd that you would, like, I understand he's got some connection, but it's like, there's like, I've talked to a couple different guys that used to coach college D1, and they're like, I don't know if I want to come back and deal with that. Like, if you've got an opportunity to coach elsewhere, and I mean, last week this was Patreon only content where I asked the BC guys about Halfley, who left as head coach of the football team to go be the defensive coordinator of the Packers. And that stuff, I think, is going to happen more and more now throughout sports, because it's so hard. I mean, even especially for football, when you're talking about 100 guys that you're trying to manage all the time, even though they have way more coaches, like, it's just a lot of work to not only be recruiting new guys, but trying to figure out how you're going to juggle your roster with all the possible departures. And then you've got teams like Northern Michigan with, what, 12 guys in the portal. And I think Alaska Anchorage had like 9 guys go in the portal today. So it's just like,
I just don't feel like it's not a sustainable model for the sport. It is going to drive what made college sports special away. You have way too many people trying to jump to go Big Ten or the bigger name programs, as opposed to what we used to have where, you know, if someone late blooms, they're at the school they're at. Now, I get it. You don't want to have a student trapped somewhere. I fully appreciate and understand that. But there needs to be something figured out to do it in a better way than what we're doing now.
I think it goes back to, too, you can do what you said. Like, it basically make the NLI a contract. You can offer a 4-year scholarship now, fully guaranteed. You're allowed to do it. You know, for a long time, it was just a series of 1-year agreements, but you're allowed to offer a 4-year full scholarship guaranteed. Yeah. If you do that and the player accepts it, that should be considered a 4-year, like my argument has always been, that's considered a 4-year deal. That player can still transfer because you don't want anybody trapped, but if they do, they have to sit a year under like what the old rule was. That was my kind of proposal.
No, that makes sense. But if you're signing a year-to-year deal and you decide at the end that you want out, then you don't have to sit out, and that's fine.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because the coach at least has an expectation of, like I said, who's committed and who's not. And
at the same time, the coach could also say, hey, we're not renewing your scholarship for next year. Like, that's a two-way street.
Yeah. You know? It's going to become more of a two-way street, whereas in the past, it's always felt like if a coach pulled scholarships too often, he would struggle in recruiting in the future.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's way more cutthroat. But also my experience with recruits over the years is regardless of how many times a school like Michigan or even Michigan Tech in the Mel years did stuff like that, where they just kind of let go of guys who never developed before they even got to school. Like, every kid thinks they're not the one, so they don't worry necessarily about the kid that got cut because he didn't make it, right? Like, every kid that commits at 16 thinks they're going to be the best player at 19 on the team. But if they don't develop, they're going to get cut and the coach is going to move on to somebody else before they even get to campus. And that happened a lot in the Mel Pearson years. Like, I have a spreadsheet of like 6 or 7 guys that just never made it. And Joe had to clean up some of that when he came in. But that stuff isn't going to burn you anymore. And part of the problem too, Rob, is we still don't really know what this is going to be like, because we're still dealing with the COVID year for one more year.
I don't think the COVID year matters. Look what's happening Northern and Alaska, right? That's not a COVID symptom. That's a,
yeah, but all indications with else. Northern are that's Grant. Like, I've seen multiple things about it being that Grant wants to pivot.
Sure.
So it doesn't necessarily sound like it's players lacking loyalty. It's that Grant has decided to pivot and go a different direction.
It could be, but then you look at Alaska, right? Just their whole team basically.
Independence, I think, are hosed, because I think so many of the kids that end up there, they're already looking like the whole reason they're going there is to, like, because that's the D1 scholarship they got, but they want to go somewhere where they can make the tournament or win a conference championship and that kind of stuff. So I think that's the problem with being an independent in this era. Well, Mike, before we let you go, you got anything you want to plug?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you said at the top, if people want to see my stuff, you can do it over at collegehockeyinsider.com. That's about it.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for coming on. It was great talking to you. Nice to have somebody with a different perspective tell us what they thought of Tech and the regional. And
yeah.
1 minute remaining in the podcast.
Well, that should do it for this episode of the Chasing McNaughton podcast. Please check out our Patreon and join by visiting patreon.com/techhockeyguide, just like Chadwick Elder did during this episode, which happened like 2 hours ago now. But oh well. Patrons at the white level above receive question priority. Patrons at the black level above receive access to extra podcast content, including extended versions of every podcast. Patrons at the gold level or above receive access to our unfiltered YouTube video, which is what Chadwick Elder signed up for today. We have 2 more levels above that, including a now $100 level, which is only there because one of the people who donated to the Misfits bus couldn't figure out how to pay us by credit card via PayPal or Venmo. So we just created a $100 tier for one day so he could do that. And I think we netted like $89 after all the Patreon and credit card fees. So not too bad. Follow us on Twitter at Chasing Mac Pod or at Tech Hockey Guide. You can submit questions through Twitter, Facebook, or on our Patreon page. We usually post a post on Tech Hockey Guide directly now asking for questions too. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I did go and update the chasingmcnaughton.com website, which sends you to Tech Hockey Guide slash podcast, because apparently like 3 of the podcast links that I used to have on there, those podcast sites don't exist anymore, which is awesome. I'm glad I actually looked at that for once in the last couple of years. If you can't find the podcast on your site of choice, please let us know and we'll make it happen. The more you rate, review, and share, the more people we can reach. So tell your friends, Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Fibke Dental in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, Arcadia Insurance servicing most of the Midwest and other places, and Livonia Technical Services. Finally, thanks to the Thank You Notes for all the bumpers in this week's episode. If you like what you hear, check them out at thethankyounotes.bandcamp.com.
You've been listening to the Chasing McNaughton Podcast, presented by Tech Hockey Guide, covering the Michigan Tech Huskies and the CCHA.